Hello and welcome to Forbes India. I am Nasreen Sultana and you are listening to Budget Simplified with Forbes India, where I, along with experts, will simplify the Union Budget 2023 and set the context around it.
I have five major announcements to make in this regard. These primarily benefit our hard-working middle class. The first one concerns rebate. Currently, those with income up to 5 lakh do not pay any income tax in both old and new regimes. I propose to increase the rebate limit to 7 lakhs.
And in the last full budget, before Prime Minister Narendra Modi seeks a third term, the government unveiled a slew of measures aimed at appeasing India's middle class. The Finance Minister Nirmala Sitharaman proposed various changes in the new tax regime to make it more popular. Out of the five major announcements made under personal tax, proposals have been made for salaried individuals opting for new tax regime, change in tax slab rates, and introduction of standard deduction. But the new math looks puzzling and complex, leaving a trail of chaos among taxpayers trying to understand how will the new taxation structure benefit. So, to understand and simplify this new taxation proposals that will come into effect from 1st April 2023, I'm joined by Parizat Sarwala, Partner and Head, Global Mobility Services, Tax, KPMG in India. Hi Parizat, welcome to the show.
Hi Nasreen.
So Parizat, let's get to the questions directly. And there's a lot of confusion with the change in the what the government had announced in the budget with the change in the tax regime. So would you like to give us your first take on it?
Yeah, sure, Nasreen. I thought, it was, after some time, there have been quite a few significant changes from a personal tax perspective. Keeping in mind that this was the fifth budget presented by the finance minister with a clear intent, as she mentioned in her budget speech, that there is an intent to maintain continuity, stability of taxation, and also at the same time, rationalize and simplify the compliance burden and provide relief. Moving in that direction, I thought there was a great attempt to woo the middle class, particularly the salary taxpayers, and give them a reprieve in terms of, more disposable income by making some changes to the personal tax regime. And there is a strong push, as was the stated intent, even 2 years back when the finance minister came up with the new tax regime, which basically is an attempt to move to a lower tax rate structure and do away with most exemptions and deductions. So that has been the intent or the thrust behind the new regime. And there have been some significant changes in the proposed new regime now as well to make it more attractive, to nudge taxpayers to avail of that scheme, which we can, of course, discuss as we delve deeper into this conversation.
Right. So, of course, the new tax regime was already there, but now that it has become a default and there are few changes in terms of the slab and the category of your tax slabs. So that actually has created a lot of confusion in the minds of a taxpayer. So if you can break that up for us, and how does one benefit if one gets into the new tax regime?
Let me take a stab at that, because at first brush, it's not so simple to understand. It's also going to be a function of each individual taxpayer's circumstances. But let me attempt to sort of elucidate that a little bit more simplistically. So first of all, there was already a new regime proposed by the finance minister 2 years back. So we are already looking at a situation where there is an old regime of taxation with popular deductions like HRA, ATC, interest on housing loan, etc. There has been no change in that regime at all. There was a new regime, as I said, introduced sometime in financial year 2021. However, it was not really gaining popularity, and there were very limited takers for that because most of the reductions were not available therein. So yesterday, there is an absolutely amended new tax regime, and we will discuss that. Diving into the details, this new regime has been overhauled with what I would say as five key changes. First of all, under this proposed new regime, the basic exemption limit has been increased from the existing 2.5 lakhs per annum to 3 lakhs per annum. Then the income slabs, which were there, so earlier we had six income slabs, now we have five income slabs, and therefore one of the rates of 25% tax rate has been removed. Then there is another important change that now income earners up to 7 lakhs of rupees by virtue of a rebate section will not now have to pay any taxes. So if you have income up to 7 lakhs, by virtue of an enhancement of rebate, you don't pay any taxes under this new regime. One more welcome change is standard deduction of 50,000 for salaried and pensioners has been allowed. So if you're a salaried individual, you now opt for the new scheme, up to 7.5 lakhs per annum, you're not going to pay any taxes. The last but not the least key change under the new regime proposed is that currently the highest surcharge rate of 37% on income above a particular threshold of 5 crores was triggering, which has also now been reduced to 25%. So that kind of drops the peak rate of tax also from around 42% plus to 39%. So overall, with the intent to move the taxpayers to this new regime, the provisions have definitely attempted to make it more attractive.
Right.
Clearly, the post-budget interactions also say of the finance minister and her team clearly say that the new regime is now going to be the default regime. And while they have allowed the taxpayers to continue with the old regime as well, it appears that going forward, the intention is or the objective is to move away from a deduction or an exemption structure just to save taxes to a more simplified structure where there are lower tax rates but no exemptions.
Right.
What that leaves us to grapple with to answer is your specific question that what is the break even or when should I switch from the old scheme to the new scheme? And if you just bear with me,
Yeah.
that actually, the choice is actually a function of two very important factors, and there is no straitjacket formula. It actually depends on gross income level and the quantum of exemptions and deductions. So, for instance, Nisreen, you could be at a different income level, I could be at a different income level. You may be claiming certain exemptions and deductions. You may be staying in a rented house, you may be claiming HRA exemptions, you may have certain other deductions under ATC, and my position could be completely different. So this choice has to be made by any and every individual taxpayer, depending on his and her circumstances. Having said that, some rough and ready calculations do seem to indicate that if your income range is in the range of annually 7.5 lakh to roughly 15 lakh of rupees, and if your annual deductions and exemptions, let's say your ATC, your HRA, your interest on housing loan, was to the tune of around 1 lakh 60 to 1 lakh 70 thousand per annum or more than that, then you still may be better off availing the old tax regime still. However, if you are in the range of 15 lakhs to say up to 5 crores, and your quantum of deduction is around 3.75 lakhs or more. And I'm excluding the 50,000 standard deduction out of the equation because that's kind of neutralized. You now get it under the new regime as well. So then you may be still better off at the old regime. But let's say if you're a high income earner and your income is about 5 crores, then definitely the new regime is better. So I'd like to just reiterate that it's a function of your gross income. It's a function of the quantum of exemption and reduction that you are claiming. And, you know, accordingly, you will have to work out the arithmetic to decide, you know, which regime is more beneficial for you. Having said that, post-budget interactions of the finance minister and her team definitely seem to indicate that unhesitatingly we want to nudge taxpayers to move to the new regime, but we are not stopping anyone at this moment. So that seems to be the clear intent.
Right. That's a quite complex structure. And I understand what you're saying, that it depends on your income structure. And that would probably decide which tax regime you should be sticking to or maybe move for the new one. Now, moving on, there were a few other changes as well. There was something that we had discussed about the tax. I mean, the insurance premium, there is no tax rebate on your if your insurance premium is more than 5 lakhs. So how would that play out and what would be the consequence on the taxation then?
Yes, Nasreen, I think that's a very important one. And I think it's in the context of changes to the exemption, just to be specific to the section. It is Section 1010D of the Income Tax Act. Now, it is interesting to note that exemption for maturity proceeds received other than death, okay, from life insurance policies, other than unit-linked insurance policies, is now restricted to only those policies whose annual premium does not exceed 5 lakhs, which only means that, you know, you may recollect that around February 21, there was a taxation already introduced on proceeds from high-value ULIPs. And at that time, the aggregate premium was around 2.5 lakhs as a ceiling threshold specified. And that income on maturity of ULIPs was already taxed as capital gains. Well, yesterday's finance bill now proposes to tax the net proceeds received from any other policy. So basically, all your non-ULIP policies issued on or after 1st April 23, where the aggregate premium for one or more policy exceeds 5 lakhs, that maturity proceed is proposed to be taxed under the head income from other sources. Of course, any proceed on account of death is going to continue to remain exempt. The non-ULIP policies, so any cashback, any endowment policies that you already have prior to 1st April 23 continue to be grandfathered, which means continue to be exempt. The computation mechanism has to be separately prescribed because the issue that arises or the complexity that arises is, and we saw that in the case of ULIPs as well, when last year the provision was introduced, is what happens when you have multiple policies? How do you see it? How do you tax it? And there was a circular issued in detail in 2022 Jan, if I recollect. And, you know, it is pretty complex in terms of the computation mechanism of calculating, you know, what is exempt and what is taxed, particularly for multiple policies. But this is a big change, and the insurance industry is definitely not too happy about it, you know, and one has to really read the fine print and see definitely this is proposed to be taxed, particularly for high value insurance policies.
Right. This would mostly impact the probably the high the bigger sum that policy assured, right? Because 5 lakh premium would be for a bigger sum assured policy. Now, moving on to another section that was mentioned in the policy, in the taxation policy, was the Section 54 and Section 54F that had basically the rollover benefits are limited now. So could you just simplify that for us?
Yeah, sure. Just to sort of, before I explain the change, it's important to understand the current provisions and what are we talking about. So currently, if you sell a long-term capital asset, so whether that asset is a residential property or it could be anything, it could be shares or any other long-term capital asset, and you reinvest either the capital gains on sale of the house or the sales proceeds on sale of any other long-term asset, you could invest and purchase another house property in a residential house property in India, and you could get exemptions on the long-term capital gains from the original asset. So there were, depending on conditions, there were time periods specified. And this was what in tax popularly called as rollover tax exemptions. And the specific sections were 54 and 54F. So what used to happen was that, people, whenever you would sell a house or any other large share transaction, you could either invest the capital gains or the sales proceeds, and subject to other conditions, you could invest into another house property. And there was no limit on the cost of the new house property that you could purchase. And therefore, you were able to legitimately exempt your long-term capital gains on account of sale of your original long-term asset. Now, what has happened is that, again, that if you read the intent of the provisions, it appears that what the government believed is that the intention behind these exemption provisions was actually to address the shortage of housing in India and to give impetus to the real estate sector. But what they believed and saw is what they thought was that, high net worth individuals were using these provisions to claim exemptions by purchasing real high-end luxurious villas or houses, and real large real estate deals were happening. So basically, now the cost of the new property that you purchase is capped to 10 crores. So this will definitely impact the high net worth individuals, or you could have maybe startup promoters who have large capital gains on sale of shares and business, who would invest in residential properties earlier without any embargo or thresholds on the limits, will now be impacted by this provision. And this again is applicable from 1st April 23 onwards. So it's a change from a long-term capital gains exemption perspective.
Right, Parizad. So we are really squeezed on time, but before I let you go, anything else that we need to highlight in the new taxation regime from the personal taxation front?
I think from a tax perspective, Nisreen, we've covered it all, because since it's intended to be the default regime going forward, and as a salaried taxpayer, once you opt for it, you can make a change. But maybe from a payroll perspective, earlier what used to happen would be that employees would basically avail the old regime and then change it at the end of the year, depending on how the maths would work out. But maybe now, if you don't really declare to the employer, the default would be the new regime. So that is one aspect that I think we should be conscious about. And of course, we've not really gone into the TCS provisions, but if you happen to be, again, individuals in the high income category and you're remitting huge sums of money, let's say, and you have overseas children, then there are some significant changes in the tax collection at source provisions, which are more cash flow issues, but that's another change. But overall, Nisreen, I would say a strong budget, which is trying to do a balancing act around growth, fiscal consolidation, and also provide relief to middle-class taxpayers, though largely in the new tax regime, and also continued in the direction of providing amendments for rationalizing of tax laws, and making things more simple from an ease of, you know, compliance perspective as well.
Right. Parizad, thanks a lot for really breaking that up and simplifying it for us, because the new tax regime has really created a lot of confusion among all the taxpayers, especially from the individual taxpayers of the income salaried bracket. So thanks a lot for giving us your time and, of course, explaining the things in details.
Most welcome, Nasreen. Thank you for having me over.
You can catch us on every Tuesday at 10 a.m. For feedback, you can reach out to me at Nasreen Story in Twitter or write to nasreen.sultana@nw18.com. For more podcasts like this, you can log on to forbesindia.com. We are also available on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram.